Hello, everybody, and welcome back to yet another episode of Gameable Audio. This week, we're going to talk on the subject of sorrow within video games. I am your host, Kristoffer Schenström, and a little bit of a warning today. Of course, I'm going to talk about these kind of sorrow moments within gaming. So for people who have not played the games that we're going to talk, or I'm going to talk about this week, it is highly recommended that either you will skip the information about that this episode maybe, or that specific song. Or, of course, these are older games as well, so if you don't mind having that spoiler, then you can just join in on these sorrow moments. I'm just super excited for this episode, not because it's just sorrow, because sorrow is, of course, a touchy and kind of sad subject, for obvious reasons, but the main reason why I'm so interested in this is to talk a little bit more about the specific moment these sorrow moments do happen in togetherness with the music, basically. So with that said, let's dive a little bit into the more generic part of what I'm after here. First of all, we're going to talk about the subject of sorrow. And usually when you come down to the aspect of sorrow within either movies, video games, or even in real life, it usually is kind of a action or consequence of an action that ends up with someone being hurt in some way. Of course, I'm not talking about, I hit my knee and now I'm sad due to that. That's not sorrow. No. Sorrow is usually the loss of something, the consequence of an action. Either a person sacrifices themselves in order to save somebody else, or there's a consequence due to the fact of the aspect of the game, for example, where somebody just happens to be at the wrong place at the wrong time, either losing their life or they're losing something that is important to them. There's a lot of different sections, and I hope we can have a little bit of a glimpse of variety in this episode. That's kind of what I went after. And of course, all the tracks that I've picked for this week, I don't know them personally, not every track of them, but I have played each and every game, so I know them very well in that sense. Not because I'm just super enthusiastic about these games, but I do remember these moments in why sorrow or sadness was so such a big deal out of this. And I didn't want to dive in too deep in complexity and so on. I still wanted to touch a little bit on the surface and of course give some variations all together with some tips and tricks right at the end, because I do have something that I really enjoy on the subject of sorrow or sadness. But with that said, let's dive into the first track of the week. We're going to talk about Gears of War 3, and this is the track Full Circle that we're going to listen to. Enjoy! This was the track Full Circle from the game Gears of War 3. And before we dive a little bit deeper on the specifics of this moment, let's just take a little bit of a time and talk generically about Gears of War. Gears of War is a series where you basically play the main protagonist, Marcus Fenix, which is like a soldier type of... I don't know exactly all the specifics, but he's in this, like... company called COG, and that's a collation of Gears, if I remember correctly. Was a little bit of a time since I played this game, but I do remember a specific moment from this specific game. But when it comes to this game, there's a lot of thing that goes down when you are a soldier. You're going into the thing where you basically know that you're going to war. Of course, it is to protect something, do something good. You're taking an action to do something good for humanity. Or at least that's kind of the basic concept of it. You're protecting something that is yours. But in this game, there's a lot of different things happening. And they're fighting against like these large locust faction, which is basically like an insect alien race. And there's a lot of things that goes on with this faction. And of course, there might be other factions as well. I haven't played through all of these games, so there might be some additions to these. I'm only aware of the first game and the third game, because I did not play the second game for some reason, and I don't know why. Not a fan favorite of mine to play the Gears of War games, but I do like that it is such a tight control, and it is kind of interesting to play, but I just never really resonated with the full thematic of the game. So, considering that when you're a soldier and there's a lot at stake here, you're protecting something that is yours, there's still a lot of things when it comes to loss in this subject. And that's where you kind of come into the largest portion of the sadness or the sorrow. Having your mates by your side and you know that you could lose them at any point in time. In Gears of War 3, when this track is playing, it is actually not the track itself that puts on the sorrow. This is actually the build-up for the full sorrow moment that goes on. From the first game all the way until the third game, Marcus Fenix is joined in by his good old friend Dominic. And Dominic, in the third game, when they are basically in a shitfest, to say the least, they're surrounded, there's kind of no way out, Dominic takes it up on himself to get in a car or like a large truck, drive through the locust, hit their home or the heart of this, and sacrifice himself. When this moment kind of builds up, this is the time when you have the full circle track going on. This is a full cinematic, so when you're looking at this, this is when you can see that everything kind of goes to shit, the build-up itself. When it comes a little bit onward in this track, about 1 minute or so, then you will start having this kind of unfunny kind of feeling, unfunny kind of vibe to it. It's like the chills going in. This is the time when Dominic kind of gets the radio silence from Marcus Fenix. Marcus Fenix trying to shout out, like, Dominic, what are you doing? And Dominic basically just says farewell. And then he drives this car on too. And as he drives along and you can see all the explosions happening, you get this kind of crescendo being the good old track Mad World. And I think a lot of you guys know of that song, not this Full Circle one. But this is where it gets kind of, like, specific. Even though the Mad World is a very emotional type of track, I still feel that Full Circle really gets the chills going. And of course you can kind of resonate and you kind of understand what Dominic is doing. But at that time, from the buildup of the sorrow that comes into play here with Full Circle, when Mad World kicks in, that's when it becomes emotional. And that's what I think makes this such a good track to start out this episode with. And I really adore this song as well. Even though it doesn't really have too many kind of emotional vibes to it, I still think it's kind of an epic and still kind of thrilling type of song. and works exactly like it should do, as a build-up. So considering on this soundtrack here was composed by the American Steve Jablonski. And of course, it was additional music with some other Americans, such as Jacob Chea, Peter Schlossner, and Nathan Whitehead. The game, it was developed by the American studio Epic Games, and the game was released on the 20th of September back in 2011. And this game was, at this point in time, an exclusive release for Xbox 360, and this is also the console that I got the game for. The game here, it was also released in 2015 on the Xbox One series as a downloadable version. Of course, it is still the Xbox 360 version out of that one. And later on, it also were available on Xbox Cloud Gaming. So that's the other way you kind of gang around, but it's still kind of console or kind of Xbox exclusive, at least. It never really got away on PC or got on to PlayStation. But looking here at the main composer, this is the only one that I'm gonna cover a little bit more on here, because the other ones did not compose this specific track, even if they joined in on the full soundtrack for this. So Steve, he is kind of an interesting fella, to be honest. Just kind of looking through what he's gone through, where he started, and kind of where he's going. Today he works at Hans Zimmer Studio Remote Control Production. I didn't get too much extra information about that one specifically, but that's apparently the name. But anyway, considering where he started out. So, he started out back in 2006 with video game music for the game The Pirates of the Caribbean, or Caribbean. I don't know why I'm saying Caribbean. It's kind of usually what people say here in Sweden, at least. I don't know. Anyway, moving on. This was the Dead Man's Chest game, and it was just not for one, but for all the versions of this game. So we have Game Boy Advance, PSP, and Nintendo DS. And although it only states that he worked on all the music for the PSP version, the other version, he's only credited for the track The Black Pearl. And also, considering his like massive list of different games, there's a lot of similarities and a lot of series that he's worked on as well, which is interesting in my opinion. He worked on not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, but six different Transformer games. You have the Transformers Decepticon / Autobots version, which is for the Nintendo DS, which released back in 2007. You have Transformers The Game from 2007, Transformers Revenge of the Fallen in 2009, Transformers Dark of the Moon in 2011, and lastly, the Transformers Ride of the Dark Spark that was released in 2014. He did also do a quick takeover from Frank Klepacki, who worked on the Command & Conquer series. And here he kind of joined in on the two versions, or the both versions that were released for Command & Conquer 3, the Tiberian Wars and the Kane's Wrath. And some other hand-picked random games that I just wanted to pick up and show off is The Sims 3 from 2009, and also Prince of Persia: The Forgotten Sands, which was released in 2010. It is, however, important to state that Steve did not start out as a video game music composer. He actually started out in movies, going back all the way to 2003, with the music for the cult classic, I would say today, or maybe not cult yet, but it is a classic though, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And even as it seems that he left video game music behind right now, he is still credited for the Gears of War 4 back in 2016, and he's still very active with music within movies, being the next movie that he's working on is The Electric State that will release in 2024. So that's all, folks, on Steve. And yeah, that was kind of it. I don't have anything else to kind of add up on Gears of War 3 here. So let's actually roll the cartridge for the next one. We're loading up The Walking Dead, a Telltale game series. And the track we're going to listen to is Clementine Suit, but specifically the song that is now called online by the fans, Goodbye. Walking Dead, a Telltale Game series. And this was the song specifically called Goodbye, not per se by the composer that I know of. But this is part of the kind of altogether track that is called on the soundtrack Clementine's Suit. So when it comes to this game, first of all, The Walking Dead is about like a post-apocalyptic or like a modern apocalypse going on. It's a zombie apocalypse, basically. And I guess everybody in the world here knows of a zombie apocalypse, and this is not any different of any other apocalypse. If you've seen or know about The Walking Dead, or if you know any other zombie movie, for example. Not much of a difference, I would say. So in this, of course, when you're living in a world filled with zombies, you're bound to lose the people that you love. And I would say when it comes to that type of situation, you will learn to live to the fullest every day with the small or the little things that you have. Because it is hard when you have something, when you have a lot of something, everybody else wants it. And we've seen this in TV series, and you see this in the game as well. If you have a lot of something that somebody wants, people will try to get it, even if it costs their own lives. So, sorrowness when it comes to a zombie apocalypse, it's almost constant, I would say. You're sad over the things that you've lost. You're sad, or you feel sadness to the things are not gonna be the same, and you're very wary of, or you're having bad thoughts over what will tomorrow bring. I mean, theoretically, you could die in your sleep by a zombie walking up on you if you don't have somebody guarding you, etc. But in The Walking Dead, you will play as Lee, and early on in this game, you will play it kind of episode-wise. You will play it through season, and each season is having 5 chapters or 5 episodes. And the song itself is on the first season, but this song is also something that kind of comes by later in the series as well, which is why I kind of selected this one specifically. And I'm not jumping tracks here or anything. But early on in episode 1, Lee, I will not tell his kind of backstory because you will be able to play that, but he finds this little girl called Clementine, and he decides to take her in, and he will try to get Clementine to her parents. And yeah, that's kind of the story of this game. And in this game, like most of the Telltale games, you will be put up to make difficult choices. Choices that will impact the future. Sometimes who will live, who will die. Sometimes you will be the bane of somebody else with your choices, etc. So during this compassion that the game kind of excels in, the storytelling of survival, it is very interesting to follow the path of both Lee and Clementine growing together as they move along throughout these episodes, and of course getting to know a lot of different characters. But even all the hardships that they go through, everything, as I said, comes to an end. And this kind of comes up and happens to Clementine and Lee as well. So a little bit of a spoiler here in why this song is so impactful to why, first of all, but also to the game itself. So in the last episode, in the last season, Clementine is actually, for almost the first time, because you usually tend to play Lee throughout this game to some extent. Of course, there are like certain different aspects or certain moments where Lee is kind of asking Clementine to do something. But in this point in time, the reason why we're listening to a track that is usually kind of connected to Clementine is, for the first time, Clementine is doing a choice. And the choice she needs to do here is because Lee got bitten by a zombie. That means that he is going to turn. he kind of shackles himself up to an element, to one of those always called radiators, and he lets Clementine make an action. All the way that it kind of builds up. We're talking in Gears of War 3. We're talking about having the build up with Full Circle, and then you kind of had the Sora moment. But in this time, you're already aware of what is going to happen to Lee. He's going to turn into a zombie if you don't do anything. Right when Clementine gets... They kind of had their last kind of conversation before the choices are shown to you. But this is the perfect time when you can hear the piano coming in. And you can hear Clementine's track kind of go up. And the beauty of this that you kind of have this section where you were playing Lee all along, but now the tables have turned. It is Clementine's turn to make an active decision of doing something that impacts life in this sense. So of course, in this game, you are able to either choose to end Lee in a specific way, or you can let him turn into a zombie. And having this track playing in the background, having this kind of sorrow imprinted to this track, it is really hard to make this decision. And I don't remember specifically if you have like the full time of the world or if this is going to be like one of those moments where you need to act fast. I'm pretty sure you could take your time on this one. To actually think through, but overall there will be a conversation going back and forth between Clementine and Lee in this sense if you're not taking this action. But the beauty of this, I really adore this, because the track fills such a role on this one. And that is why I think this was like a perfect pick when we're talking about Sorrow. You've been traveling for, I think it's about 1 hour per chapter that you're playing, or season that you're playing with all this, or maybe a little bit more. So you spend time with this duo for over six, I would say about 6 to 7 hours at least. So you're kind of connected. You know how they're kind of interconnected with each other and how much Lee has taken care of Clementine. So this is not an easy decision. And if it is, you're a freaking psychopath. That's what I'm saying. But it is really hard to take this choice, and it's just beautiful in so many aspects, in my opinion, when we're looking at it from the perspective of the gameplay, of what build up to it, and in the end, the choice that you have to make, and you have this music composing it so well into that. So when we're talking about the track itself, so the track Clementine Suit is largely a compilation of all the different tracks that is referenced to the little girl character Clementine. So if you're listening to this, you will hear the song Goodbye specifically within this track, but I think it's like 5-7 minutes long in total if you're going to listen to it on Spotify, for example. So when it comes to the soundtrack here, it is actually composed by the multi-talented American composer, sound designer, voice director, and voice actor Jared Emerson Johnson. The game, it was developed by the American studio Telltale Games, or just Telltale Corporation. And the game, it was initially released back in 2012 on PC, Xbox 360, PS3, Mac, and on iOS. And this was, in the beginning, only a Season 1 version, as it later on came a total of 5 chapters, or 5 seasons, with each being released with 5 episodes. And this was released by the end of 2012, so it was a little bit more than 1 year. Season 1 to 4 was released in between 2012 until 2019. So we had a span of 7 years for these seasons. So we had the chapters, season one released with the chapters by the end of 2012, and then season 1 to 4 in total of 2012 to 2019. Of course, just like the first chapter, the first season, the chapters were released, or episodes were released, on par a little bit after each other. But it's super interesting kind of relay of how they kind of shows to kind of present everything to people. And I kind of enjoy that as well from a gaming perspective. And of course, it feels weird buying new chapters and new seasons over and over again. But in the end, it was not a lot of money for each of these episodes and chapters. So in the end, you're paying like a full-priced game. And of course, they did release like a full-on game with all the seasons and all the episodes in one disc as well. So you didn't need to go in and download some DLCs, etc. later on. But looking at the composer here, Jared, he worked with Telltale for a long time, working on multiple or a lot of their games, as I would say, including series such as Sam & Max, Back to the Future, Game of Thrones, The Wolf Among Us, Batman, and Guardians of the Galaxy, just to name a few. There is more, just so you so I have that said. But when it comes to Jared, he started out way before this, all the way back in when it was Indiana Jones and the Emperor's Tomb for PC back in 2003. And there he worked as a music preparer. Don't know specifically what that means. And I didn't find any interview or anything where he talked about this specifically. So I'm a little bit unsure about that one. But that was his kind of first professional musical gig that he did, or that he is credited for, that I could find. But since then, he has made such an amazing track record of games that he's worked on. And yet again, just like the last composer, I'm only going to handpick a few here. Starting out with Bard's Tale from 2004. We have God of War and the Psychonauts in 2005. Alien Syndrome in 2007. Wallace and Gromit in The Last Resort in 2009. Kinectimals from 2010. Poker Night 2 in 2013. And lastly, The Expanse, a Telltale series that is released in 2023. And when we're talking about the subject of Telltale, and specifically, of course, about the Walking Dead, I need to just point out how amazing of a work that Jared has put into this. Usually when we're talking or listening to a soundtrack, you usually see like 30, at most I've seen like 50 tracks or something like that. When it comes to the music for the Walking Dead Telltale series, the total of all the songs for four seasons with all the episodes, this also includes the spin-off with Michonne, we have a total of 280 songs worked on for this beast. And I can only applaud to that. I was like, fudging A. That is so amazing. There is about, at least on an average, about 30 songs per season or just so people understand, each season kind of came with a two-part soundtrack, so you have that kind of, so in total you have 8 soundtrack that covers all these 280 songs, and it's just super impressive working for such a long time on the game itself, being the one that kind of molds and makes a subject out of the music, and having so much kind of emotional tracks, but yet having something that is more serene, is just super amazing, in my opinion. Love it all the way. But on the topic of having something that is amazing, we're going to talk a little bit about a special one when it comes down to the subject of sorrow, because this one is kind of a twist. And for people that have played this game, you know exactly what I'm talking about as soon as I spoil which title this game has. But we're going to listen to the track that is called The Lost Battalion from the game Spec Ops: The Line. Thank you. this song was a little bit repetitive, that's why I'm kind of fading it out a little bit, but it's still very emotional and comes with a lot of weight to it. This was Spec Ops: The Line, The Lost Battalion. And when it comes to Spec Ops: The Line, just like Gears of War, it is a third-person shooter, but this one is set in modern times, and this game kind of exists for the sole reason to talk a little bit about the subject of war not being entertainment. And what I'm trying to explain with that is also kind of a little bit of a subject Jaeger, the studio behind this, kind of shows for themselves as well when they were talking about this game in interviews. So this game kind of is set in the Middle East, in Dubai, and you're a squad sent there in order to take control and save civilians. But there's a lot of things that goes on here. You have different kind of troops or factions going on in here. But when it comes down to the subject of this game, as I said, this comes in with a little bit of weight and trying to focus a little bit on war not being entertainment. So you're sent there with a purpose, with a mission. And you're basically going straight through with the game with this mission. You're making hard and tough choices on the way there. And during this time as you play this game, you're basically feeling like, hey, this is just a game. I'm having a good time. It doesn't matter if I make any of these choices. But at the end of this game is when the twist happens. I'm talking about the very end of this game. There's a lot of things packed into this game that I will not go into, but the twist in the end makes you question the full game. Makes you question your own kind of, not sanity per se, but your own decisions during the game, but also surrounding the concept of the game. I think Spec Ops: The Line was an amazing game, even though the game itself was like, it was acclaimed as a failure. Not a lot of people bought it. It was also banned in the United Arab Emirates. And this was due to the depiction of Dubai being in ruins or at the verge of destruction. So that's just one point of it. That's just the fine line. And when it comes to the soundtrack here, this is a special one. There's a lot of different songs within this game, so it's really hard to find like a soundtrack or something like that for this. It's not even available to purchase anywhere as well, so it was really hard trying to just find some music. Of course, there's a lot of music out there on YouTube and so on. But anyway, considering the soundtrack here, it was composed by the Czech composer Ilya Cimrel. I truly hope I said that right. The game was developed by the German studio Jaeger Development and was released back in 2012 on PC, Xbox 360, PS3, and was later ported to Mac in 2013 and Linux in 2015. Looking at the composer specifically here, Ilya has not done a lot of games. He's a Czech composer working mainly in movies, shorts, and TV. But he has actually worked on two specific games. We have Spec Ops: The Line in 2012, and the first game that he worked on was The Last Express from 1997. But he does not have any other games credited to himself or that I have found, so these were the only two that I did find out. Considering when we're looking at movies, shorts, and TV, though, he started way back. So it's interesting that he actually did go in and dabble a little bit within video game music as well. I kind of like the idea, but I didn't listen to The Last Express, how the soundtrack is there, but they usually defined his work on Spec Ops: The Line as a little bit of downtone rock together with a little bit of and I quote, unearthly music. So it kind of comes with this serene weirdness in itself. But considering when he started out back in 1986, and this was for the movie A Matter of Life and Death. And none of the movies, none of the shorts, or the TV series is known to me specifically, so I can only guess that it has been a, like a very specific number of videos, movies that he has worked on. I saw the full list of all the things that he has worked on, but didn't recognize a single one of them, so I'm just guessing it can be more local, or it can be non-Hollywood that a lot of us might already know about. But now people kind of questions, like, hey, Chris, what... You never really talked about sorrow within Spec Ops The Line. No, the reason why I did not talk specifically about sorrow when it comes to Spec Ops The Line is to the fact that the full game is like a subject of sorrow itself, not just within the action. Moving around as a soldier, yet again, taking people's life, etc. It is hard, but you're doing it for a sense of how to say, sense, like a sense of protection, or that you can do the right thing. Like, everybody else is the evil person and so on. But by the end of this game, you will start to question this. And I think that is, like, the ultimate, like, thing when it comes down to sadness and to the subject of sorrow. The actions that you took actively within this game, what kind of aspect was that really for? And when you're thinking about those kind of things, when you play this game, and I hope for love of God that you do play this game, because it is a really good game. It was critically acclaimed for people that reviewed it, the critics, so to speak. But for people in the masses, it kind of went by, and I don't really know why. For me, it kind of went by, but I listened to somebody else talk about this game, talking about the choices and how hard and the twist, how mind-blowing it was. And I can only agree, without spoiling like the most interesting part about the game, I can only recommend you guys play this game and just take my words for it when I'm talking about sorrow and Spec Ops The Line. There's a lot of things going on in war, and they're all not just fancy and dandy, like we could think, playing games with a subject on war. With that said, we're moving on to the last track of the week, and this is a fan favorite of mine, in my opinion. Like, hands down, is one of the most beautiful songs that I come back to from time to time. And every time I'm listening to any track from this this soundtrack, I can't help to feel a little bit of sorrow. Sadness is definitely there as well. I can even get some goosebumps listening to some of the vocal tracks from this game. But we're not going to listen to one of those vocal tracks. We're going to listen to Four River, the piano version, which is Johnny's version, from the game To the Moon. The piano version, the Johnny's version, and this was from the game To the Moon. And when it comes to the game of To the Moon, I know a lot of people have been talking about this one. This is a non-violent type of game, a lot of humor in it, and the story of this game, just to have that presented. So you're playing as two scientists, and your kind of shtick in this game is this is in the future, and there's a company that basically gives the credibility or gives the option for people to live up to their dream as their last final moment. basically what that means is the scientist comes over to the dying person with a machine, and they alternate this person's memory so they think and believe that they have done what they most desired. So in the game To the Moon, we're meeting this old man in his home on his bed as he's dying, and he wants to go to the moon. Usually this seems to be like kind of super easy. Hey, we just boom. Hey, you're going to the moon. But for some reason, there's something up, something blocking and making it not possible for these scientists to alternate this old man's memory in order to help him. So in order to do that, they need to put a little bit of extra work in this. And this is where the gameplay kind of comes in. You're basically jumping into this old man's memories, and you need to progress through different stages of this old man's life. You actually need to get down to the bottom of what is causing these issues. You're basically getting to know this person at the beginning, going backwards. You're going all the way back to his like childhood memories. And onto that, you're getting like major kind of situations. And the biggest reason why he has those was because this old man was eating like mental blockers. And you need to kind of find and break through these blocks in order to access the next memory. And every section is kind of blocked all at once. And as you move along, you get to know this old man more and more. His life, his major experiences and so on. And of course, the love of his life. And here's when it becomes so beautiful, to say the least. The love of this old man's life starts already from like his childhood. The girl in the class, and I think even a little bit before that, he was meeting up with her, not hanging out that much with her, just playing around, having a good time. But in this game, Into the Moon, as you first of all, you just want to get your job done. That's kind of how you attack this game in the beginning. But as you get to know this man more and more, you're starting to resonate with him, but you're starting to understand. And you're getting invested in his life, of what he's been going through, the hardships, the sadness, the happiness. Everything is conveyed through either gameplay or through the music or through the visuals. You will get to know the first time he held a hand with somebody, the first time he gets his first kiss, the first time he actually sets his eyes on the moon and decides like, hey, when I grow up, I wanna go to the moon. But as you move along in this game, you will get to certain points in this old man's life where you'll see that other priorities will take place for other things. And for this man, it is not a hard decision to do so. Of course, it is tough, but it's not hard to make these decisions considering what is happening in this game. But as I moved along through this game, through the different kind of mechanics they had in this, I felt for this guy. I started to feel, I rarely cry or get super emotional in games. And when I heard people talk about To the Moon, and by the end of this game, people were crying and so on. In my point in life, I had a really hard time crying. And today, I'm much more emotional and much more like in depth with myself as a person. So today I have no problem crying and so on. But when I was younger, I had a really hard time. But To the Moon as a game, it really cracked me up. You really had a wide range of emotions going through you in this game. And by the end of this race within this game with this old man, I was crying as well by the end of this. And it's such a strong and powerful game, in my opinion. Looking at it today, I think people would see like a game that is kind of outdated to some extent. But I think if you can just look past the graphical kind of conveyness that this game does and just listen to the music and enjoy the gameplay, I think everybody's going to have a good experience with a game where they can understand and resonate to some extent, or at least understand from the perspective of this man in why I put this as like the last song, so we can remember this together as the last song of the episode. When it comes to Ultimate Sorrowness for me, of course there are a lot of different other games that kind of conveys this, but this one really is hard and it really strikes me hard as well. And this is even on a personal level for me when it comes to the moon. And I definitely adore this one. Highly recommend it. So when we're looking at the soundtrack here, the song here was composed by the Chinese-Canadian Cao Gao. And the game was developed by the Canadian studio Freebird Games and released initially on PC back in 2011. The game was also released on Linux and Mac in 2014 on phones, that would be iOS, iPad, and even for Android in 2017. And lastly, it did have a release on Nintendo Switch in 2020. Considering the soundtrack here, it was not only composed by Cao Gao, he actually co-composed it together with the amazing Japanese-American Lara Shigehara. I don't know if you guys know about her name, but I have been talking a little bit about her when we're talking on the subject with Plants vs. Zombies, for example. She's a very amazing, great composer, singer-songwriter to be exact. And she's done so many like wholesome tracks in my opinion, and she worked on a couple of games as well, especially together with Cao Gao. But yeah, for this specific song for Rivers, she did not help out, but she did help out on multiple other tracks, and especially those with lyrics. I have one that is Everything's All Right, which is one of my favorites when it comes to this soundtrack. Such an emotional track. Love it from start to finish. Looking at Can here then, he is credited on 5 different games as a composer. First one in his career being the To the Moon. Later was A Bird Story, which is also released by him through Freebird Games. That game was released in 2014. I did have this game to play as well, but I still haven't played this game. I think I definitely should. Haven't heard about this game as much as I did for To the Moon, but I'm still just hoping to enjoy a good story. Last Word was where he worked a little bit on sound effects and also voices for 2 different characters. Definitely did not apparently write the date down on that one. But after that one, we have Finding Paradise from 2017. And lastly, Imposter Factory from 2021. This is also one of those games that he worked on through Freebird Games. Ken is also known as a developer, and typically one that wears a lot of hats, as we usually say within game development. Working with production, design, programming, art, and also writing, and of course also audio. So this is a guy that has a lot of strings on his guitar, or lyre, or harp, or whatever we want to say in this space. No, but looking at all these different kind of tracks, we have Gears of War with the soldier kind of aspects, lose everything. We have The Walking Dead, where basically the world goes to shit and every day is kind of, well, it kind of sucks. We have Spec Ops The Line, going back to military, but another aspect of it. Of course, we're still talking about loss here, but what type of loss are we talking specifically about? Loss of mind is one twist we could say about it, not to spoil anything. And then in To the Moon, we have sadness and sorrowness going in throughout the aspect of losing somebody, losing oneself to some extent, but in the end achieving something. And I hope it for me who live with this sorrow, thinking that he will remember something totally different anyway, it's hard, man. It's really hard. But I love all these tracks. All these games are highly recommended. I really adored all of them. So they're super nice. All of them. Definitely. With that said, it is time for me to close down this episode. I really hope you enjoyed everything we talked about. I really hope you enjoyed these tracks. But I would like to hear a little bit more about you guys as well. So if you have anything considering a track or a game for that conveys the aspect of sadness, sorrow, etc., I would love if you guys wanted to just reach out through the comment sections and write a little bit about it. If not, join in on the Discord and talk to me there. I would just love to hear and get a little bit of a conversation, discussion surrounding this. Were I correct in my picks? Do you think something different from the tracks that I was talking about? Also, there's another aspect I want to give a little bit of a glimpse into. I know I've been referring to this at a later like an earlier date when I was doing this podcast on Swedish in Äntligen Spelmusik. I want to remind people to check through this the hidden subtext of Ocarina of Time. It is a 30-minute long video conveying the aspect of why Ocarina of Time has the saddest subject within gaming. And it's such well done, such well written, and I've been... When people talking about sadness in game, this is something I definitely just hook up. I can watch it over and over again because it's so beautiful. I will link this in the episode as well so people can look into this. But it's a subtext in context of Ocarina of Time. Sorry, I was... Anyway, highly recommend. Link will be in the description. So go definitely check it out. Other episodes of Gameable Audio, you'll find those on our homepage, videospelsklubben.se, Spotify, or in your closest podcast app. Feel free to follow, comment on one of our social medias, either on Facebook or Instagram. Just search for Gameable Audio, giving away like a follow or giving away a like on Facebook or just giving a comment to the episodes is a great help to share the episode if you don't feel like you want to share the episode itself with friends and family that you own yourself or just talk to your colleagues at work, you know. Never know. You can also choose to support this podcast for future content upgrades, quality upgrades, etc. But also in the end for future composers. So try, think about it. And if you feel like this is the right thing, just a dollar is enough, think about becoming a Patreon. So our current awesome Patreon backers that we have today is Daniel Lundemark, Lars Schenström, Titti Schenström, Kevin Wikström, and Mark Björkholm. Thank you so much for being a part and supporting this podcast and my aim to make this as great as possible. Thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. Links to where you can buy or listen or support the composers that we've been listening to today, These will be found in the main post at videospelsklubben.se. So in the next episode, I actually haven't written anything down. So just on a spontaneous thing, we're just going to go wild with another remix episode. So I just feel like, hey, let's go wild. Let me go around and find some great examples of nice, neat remixes. Maybe we can find some new ones. Maybe I can find some old gold ones that I really adore that I haven't played in the podcast yet. Don't know. We will see. But if you have any other references of music you would like to hear for the remix episode, feel free to comment in the episode and I'll definitely add it too. Of course, let's make this a great next episode. And as I'm always, and I'm going to start doing this now, the theme music for this podcast was composed by Thor Myrdal. And with that said, do take care, everybody, and see you all, guys, next time.